Chapter 27. I was to be returned to where my life began, within the wide orbital waltz of three suns and the great nebular complex of Orion, returned to home and family, where I hoped I would be allowed to recuperate, meditate, and achieve my own maturity, in my own way, and in my own time. While I was still unconscious, Builder Security escorted me out of the quarantine sphere to an adjacent system. I was finally allowed to come awake and found myself on a stripped-down personnel transport and research vessel shared by both miners and builders. My journey thereafter was swift, quiet, mostly uneventful. I was not treated differently from other passengers, mostly stellar engineers. They seemed to think I was a warrior servant recruited by the builders and recovering from some unexplained trauma. There were apparently many such being ferried to recovery centers. I did not tell them otherwise. Others continued to regard me as something of a freak. I could not disagree. I did not enjoy looking at myself in a mirror. I had certainly grown. My physical strength was much greater. In nearly every respect, I suppose, I actually am a freak. That my fellow passengers paid any attention to me spoke well of the kindly culture of these scientific adventurers, out to develop and increase the Forerunner realm without military conquest. Our ship stopped at several installations where the science of planetary formation was being taken to advanced stages. Rocky worlds were at a premium, one of the miners explained to me in the ship's small, sparsely appointed lounge. Forerunners now had the ability to collapse an asteroid field into a molten mass of the 20 megameter range, then cool and cure the protoplanet in less than 10,000 years. "The last problem remains taming young stars," he said. "But we're working on that. We send in stellar-class engineers equipped with third-class ancillas, plasma jockeys, we call them. They love the heat, but most vanish after a few hundred years. Just go away. We don't know what becomes of them. They get the job done, though." I listened politely enough, but my own misery left little in the way of curiosity. As my armor did not have an ancilla, on occasion I slept, and my dreams were extraordinary, covering thousands of lives and millions of years, cut up and rearranged in a dense tapestry of world lines. But I forgot them almost immediately upon waking. On our way through the outer reaches of the Orion Nebular Complex, popping in and out of slipspace to deliver our supplies and researchers to various stellar nurseries, we actually came within 1,000,000 kilometers of the natal planet of the Forerunners, a now desolate and radiation-scoured cinder of a world known in the most ancient tongue as Gibalb. Gibalb had once been a paradise. Emerging into the galactic realm, these early Forerunners had been content to live and develop in a glorious cradle of just 12 stars. But their first experiments in stellar engineering had gone awry, causing an infectious series of novas that brightened the entire Orion complex for 50,000 years and nearly destroyed our species. Images from that time show the nebulae to have been extraordinarily brilliant and colorful. Forerunners had long since improved upon their craft and made fewer mistakes. Now the complex was darker and much less active, barely visible from a distance of more than 100 light years. While the others were buried deep in interactions with their ancillas, I observed our journey with only eye, mind, and memory. The only interruption was a navigational glitch caused by disturbances in slipspace itself. When we were informed that our ship was 5 light years off course, one researcher surmised that the great portals were being overutilized of late. "We've been told over and over we can't deliver raw materials to needy systems. The only thing that could cause this sort of trouble is frequent passage of exceptionally large vessels, abusively frequent and unimaginably large. And who do you think authorizes that?" He swept all his fellow passengers with a meaningful look, as if we might be compelled to divulge something of our knowledge about these matters. The others, those who emerged from their ancillary studies, one and all derided his theory. I said nothing. I had witnessed one such passage, and evidence of another. But it was certainly not my place to speak about what I had seen. Still, this glitch caused an unexpected and uncontrolled detour that provoked a surprise inspection from a team of exalted builders. They arrived on a warship of unfamiliar design, sleek and fast, intercepting us near a once-deserted association of extrasolar planets. The rumor quickly spread among the researchers that we had approached a secure installation about which none of them knew anything. The boarding party consisted of builder security, none of them warrior servants, contrary to long tradition. They observed all the proper courtesies, then thoroughly scoured the transport's records. After that, they politely asked us to strip our armor. I, of course, wore none, and debriefed the researchers' ancillas, in search of what, none would say. The team soon departed, having concluded our breach was accidental, but leaving us none the wiser. Before they left, one shot me a look that combined contempt and pity. I was the only one they had ignored. This naturally brought suspicion upon me. Rumors also spread that I was the true cause of the delay, and only the bravest and lowest of the researchers would speak to me thereafter. Soon even they closed me out. The rest of my journey was solitary, until 12 light-years from home, I was transferred to a swift yacht shared by my family and 5 other builder clans. My father, mother, and sister greeted me as I crossed from the transport to the yacht. I had not seen any of them for 3 years. My father had undergone another mutation since I left, and now bore a distinct and disturbing resemblance to the master builder. My mother had changed very little. If anything, she had only become more sedate and dignified, beginning her 3rd millennial interim, during which she would neither give birth nor otherwise create offspring. Whereas my father was 4 meters tall, broad-shouldered and thick-legged, his skin like polished onyx, his well-trimmed patches of hair purplish-white, his eyes black, flecked with silver, my mother was just over 2 meters tall, slender as a reed, her hair deep red and skin silver-gray. My sister was slightly taller than our mother and less slender, in that transition stage prior to family interchange, courtship, and marriage. Even before my exile to Edom, she had been undergoing gentle mutation to reproductive maturity, and was now through the earliest phase of her advance to first form. She greeted me with silent, wide-eyed appraisal, then clasped me swiftly and warmly. My mother, seeing my condition, greeted me with painful formality. My father, with a firm clasp of my shoulder, hid his emotions and exchanged only a few precisely chosen words, welcoming me back to the fold. My parents were over 6,000 years old. My sister and I were barely 12.
"I'm sure there will be much to discuss," he concluded, before sending me to my quarters to try on a fresh suit of armor. "We will dine in an hour."
In the small, elegantly appointed cabin, the new armor was expertly spun about me. The ship assembled a perfectly dignified and unremarkable ancilla from its own reserves. Neuter and simple, it seemed a shallow parody of the one supplied by the librarian. Not very helpful and completely unexciting. "Apologies for this primitive accessory," the ship said, noting my reaction. "Your ancilla may, of course, be upgraded once you arrive at your estate." I felt a deep pang of loneliness and an odd sensation of grief. The ancilla did not know how to cheer me or what words of support to offer. I felt responsible for all that had happened and was still happening, great events known and unknown, far away, plus the fates of 1 Promethean and 2 human beings. That first shipboard dinner was awkward, quiet, unenlightening. The ship tried to serve what it thought were my favorite foods. In my present condition, they made me feel vaguely ill.
"Perhaps he requires a diet more suited to a warrior," my father suggested.
Subduing a flash of anger, I did not ask him what he might be involved in, professionally, that 20,000 light-years away, I should be treated with grim leniency by an otherwise all-powerful master builder. I had advanced, all right, well beyond being an embarrassment to being a major disaster, both behavior-wise and in physical appearance. In a few days, we were home again.